Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And would you like to save somebody? Somebody who needs saving, that you might, who you might know, or even yourself? Well, we have an answer. Someone who has saved thousands, many more than that, lives through the brilliance of his work. And to turn people on to him is how to save lives, because he has such wisdom and advice that goes to people's hearts. He originally wrote the book Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and he has a new book called A Book of Miracles. And you might guess who I'm speaking with, Dr. Bernie Siegel. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Peter.
I'm so glad.
Well, let me say this, though, that I can't save lives. I use terms like life coach and love warrior. And the life coach to me is coaching people, you know, in survivor behavior. But they have to show up for practice is the way I put it.
Right. It's so the opportunity. You give people the opportunity to survive through your wisdom and helping people understand the whole process of life.
Yep.
And death.
Yes.
And you've seen it all because you're an oncologist. And you teach other doctors, and I'm sure you've influenced so many doctors to have...
Well, I try to, but that's a tough group to work with.
Right, right. Some have heart.
You're right. Absolutely. If I may, I mean, add something that I, years ago, started asking medical students and doctors and others to draw yourself working as a doctor. And it blew my mind the first time I did that with, you know, maybe 80 or 90 medical students in a class sitting in front of me, because literally 99% of the drawings didn't have any patients in them. They had desk, you know, the future doctor and a diploma on the wall, or all kinds of equipment and pills and things.
And nobody drew a big heart.
No. One young man, and I show this, after A Book of Miracles, I wrote The Art of Healing, and it has 60 drawings in it. And one of the drawings from that class was his student kneeling in front of a wheelchair, handing a lady a tissue with his arm around her. And to me, that's being a doctor, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Not just, oh, you're depressed, here's a pill. Because that's another thing in the medical journals. I mean, you literally have this dialogue. I went to see my doctor. I was depressed. I said, I need help. I can't cope. He prescribed an antidepressant. I feel better now. And I wrote to the company saying, why don't you put a line in that says, tell me what's troubling you in your life, instead of here's a pill. And they canceled the ad. But it just blows my mind. Well, this sentence sums it up. Doctors are trained to treat the result and not the cause.
Right. They're symptomatic doctors.
Yeah. And so I learned from my own life as well as out of my patients to talk to them about what was happening in their life. And, of course, then I got blamed. I said, why am I doing the wrong thing? This is from doctors. Well, you're blaming your patients if you ask them what happened in your life. I said, I'm not blaming them, but I want them to be aware of why they might get sick at a certain time.
Right. If they can take responsibility for being sick, then they can take responsibility to get better.
Yeah. And we now have studies, takes decades to shift beliefs so that people do studies, showing how emotions affect, you know, internal chemistry and genes. I mean, loneliness is one of the prime causes of illness, in a sense, that it suppresses your immune function. So if you're lonely, you're more likely to get the flu, Ebola, or anything else.
Sure. I'm a healer myself. I'm an intuitive healer. So I dig in. When I work with people, I dig into their ancestry, to their genes, to their souls, and look at what the stories are that I'm being told. And then that helps. And I studied a system out of France called Total Biology. And they believe that everything going on in our bodies is based on some psycho-emotional fault, some gap where we could be wonderful people and everything's great, and then there's something in our history where we can't hold ourselves in enough wholeness about. And that's where it shows up in our bodies.
Yeah, I had a past life experience because a friend of mine said to me, why are you living this life? When I was very busy, she wanted me to take it easy. And I went into a trance over the phone. And I said to her, oh, my God. I mean, it was amazing because all these things happen to me that I'm not looking for, if you know what I mean. I always say I live by my experience, not my beliefs, because if something happens, I know what happened, even if I can't explain it. And I think part of what you're saying is the same thing, that we are an accumulation of consciousness. You know, it's not that I lived another life, but I have the consciousness of somebody who did, that it comes into me.
And
I call it
and it could have been yours in some form that we don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, that really doesn't matter, but that it's part of our consciousness, so it's affecting us.
Right.
And, you know, the professions we choose for healthy and unhealthy reasons, and I think the more we understand ourselves and our energy, the healthier we become. You know, I often say to people, let your heart make up your mind. I mean, a lawyer said it very well. You know, when you're only living in your head, he said that I came to a conclusion that was eminently reasonable, totally logical, and completely wrong, because while learning to think, I almost forgot how to feel.
That's beautiful.
And I think when you get people into that, you know, to understand their duality, the intellect versus the consciousness, that when the two don't agree, you're in trouble. Whether it's about your life or a treatment, you know, for your disease or anything else. You'll have far more side effects if your intuition is saying this is the wrong thing for you and your intellect is saying, well, the doctor told me and my family said, then you have all the side effects and problems because of that inner conflict. But when the wisdom and the mind come together, then there's a peaceful interior and you do far better than anybody else.
Well, I think this is why you wrote this book, A Book of Miracles, because
oh, yeah.
you wanted to show people how to do that. You wanted to show the pathways yep. that other people have used to overcome these limitations.
Yes. And let me say, the thing that, after we collected all these stories, and just so people understand, it's not about disease, it's about life. And what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross used to say to me, Bernie, there are no coincidences. You know, it's these amazing things that happen. But what, as I was rereading the book, it occurred to me that these people were choosing life. And what I mean in this way is, I place before you life and death, good and evil. Choose life. Now, what that represents is a life-enhancing act. Not a selfish one, not what's good for me, but how can Siegel help people? So you could say, oh, I'm writing a book, then I could sell and make money, or I can write a book to help people live and survive.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and when you do that, say, choosing life-enhancing behaviors, then these amazing things happen, you know?
Right, and that's why this book is an imperative for people to see how these people have chosen life, because you can't really choose life out of your left brain all the time. you have to allow life and be receptive to how life can show up in ways that we don't expect. That's why perhaps it's a miracle.
Can I give one example that I loved in the book?
Please.
The couple who were discharged from the armed forces have a Pontiac Le Mans that they love, the car and their family. And they decide they'll drive across the country to the East Coast where they lived and have a vacation on the way home. But they find that their car is having trouble climbing hills. So they're causing problems in traffic. Now, you see, that's where I say the decision comes up. Do you say, screw everybody, we want to have a vacation and enjoy the trip home? Or what they decided, we'll drive at night, we won't drive everybody crazy, we'll drive at night and we'll sleep in the daytime and goodbye to, you know, the vacation trip. But one night, driving through the middle of Nevada, they come to a hill and they see a car behind them. So they pull off the road as they slow down. The car pulls up and stops in front of them, which led them into a little panic, like, what's going to happen now? But the fella gets out of the car, comes over and says, I am the original designer of the Pontiac Le Mans. I know what's wrong with your car. He said, there are two hoses. One is to conserve fuel and suck what isn't used, and it's causing the problem. It's not working properly. And he climbs under their car and plugs the hose, and the rest of their trip is no problem. That's but how do great. You manage that?
And,
you know?
And no, I understand, and I've had that kind of thing happen several times on the road. Almost, I guess I should say, every time in my life, and I'm well into my senior years, every time in my life that my car is broken down, I've been in proximity of immediate help and a turnaround in ways that were miracles. People wanting to do things for me in my car that I wouldn't even have expected.
Well, some of that depends on where you live and what the energy is. Because I find when I get stuck in Montana in the middle of nowhere in Texas, I get invited to dinner while the brother-in-law fixes the car.
Exactly.
I mean, that really happened.
That's what I mean.
in Manhattan, the cops said, we'll send somebody. And I had a car full of kids, you know, and had to wait for somebody to show up.
Okay.
But I think it is a different energy, though, in different parts of our country as well as the world. And it makes a difference. You know, it's about relationships, and those are the things that keep us going and keep us alive, whether it's pets or people. They all affect us, and that's why I keep repeating. I mean, whether you use the word our energy or our chemistry, we are changed by all those things.
Yes, and that's the opportunity. Last week I did a show with Mary O'Malley, who you might know, who wrote the book, What's in the Way is the Way.
Right.
And that's really a way of interpreting life to be on our side.
Yeah. Well, I like reading Joseph Campbell, and one of his sentences was, when you're going through hell, ask yourself, what am I to learn from this? And I find that very helpful. You know, when I don't like how I'm behaving or I'm in a difficult time, I stop and say, what am I to learn from this? And so I call life a labor pain. You know, there are difficulties, but when you use it, this is the quote of an end of a poem where a lady compared 9 months of pregnancy to 12 months of chemotherapy and radiation. See, the first 9 months, she said, and I give birth to my child, all the discomfort and pain is justified. And the second, I gave birth to myself, all the discomfort and pain is justified. And I think when you see it as a labor pain, it doesn't hurt as much, and you know it's going to lead you to something better. So you don't get depressed about being depressed. Just the way you get hungry, you go get something to eat. So you turn these uncomfortable feelings into ways of making you seek nourishment.
Right. The idea is to reframe situations to be on our side. And how do we get the most of it? And we don't always know. We just have to keep watching because we can't figure it out necessarily. If people are listening to this interview and saying, now, how can I figure out how to get the most out of myself from what they're saying? It's really not that helpful to try to create strategies as to try to be more receptive.
Yeah, it's Jung said the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance. And that's why, you know, it's happening at another level, not just thinking. But I have to also say this. I mean, it's a pleasure talking to another male because it's so hard to get the men to participate in this, you know, to deal with emotions and feelings and everything else. I always say whenever I'm out lecturing, you know, you have a few hundred women and 10 guys in the audience.
Exactly.
They always say they should get a discount. And if you're married to one of them, you got a top-notch guy. Because, I mean, I'm seeing a change. You know, more men are showing up in our support groups with wives whom they love. Versus what they would always say is, I'm her chauffeur. You know, no emotions, just the practical. See, I drove her here. That's why I'm here. But now the men are there because they care about the woman that they've come with. And it's such a pleasure, you know, to see that begin to happen.
And we're in a time of more opportunity. That's why we can have this show.
Yes. And yeah, that's a good thought. Thank you. But you know what I found in a sense is that no one was against success. What I mean is, I did a lot of crazy things in the hospital, you know, how I cared for my patients. And, you know, people thought, well, I mean, an example that I used to laugh at, I brought music into the operating room where you have explosive gases. And they said, you can't do that. You're an explosion hazard. But within a week, nobody complained because they all felt better with the music playing in the background. And so then it becomes hospital policy, and I'm no longer a hazard, see? And I used to laugh at all the things, and the nurses would support me, because if they saw it working, they would get the word out to all the other doctors, too. So my patients would say, it's so nice here, the new hospital policy. I'd say, yeah, I get credit for nothing, just hospital policy. But if it worked, nobody was against it. It's just that if it... Well, as one doctor said, I can't accept that, you know. And I'd say, why are you denying something when I'm telling you a true story about a patient? But he couldn't explain it. He couldn't understand it. It wasn't what he heard in medical school. Even I have never met a medical student who's been told that about 90 or more years ago, Carl Jung interpreted a dream and diagnosed a brain tumor correctly in a patient. I mean, I think students should be told things like that. So they talk to patients in a different way and ask them if they have an intuitive sense about what's going on in their life and their body, and, you know, to open that dialogue up so the patients don't think they're crazy if they had a dream and they're afraid to tell people, because it's just amazing. The wisdom that comes forth in all these symbols and images.
Right. That's why you use drawings. And people have diagnosed themselves in drawings.
Absolutely. The anatomy is in them. See, when I drew one first for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross when I was dealing with my emotional troubles as a doctor. You know, I cared about people, and here they are dying, and I can't fix everything. And nobody prepared me for that. I mean, they prepared me for the disease, not the person. And so when I drew a picture for her, her first question was, what are you covering up? And that was because I used a white crayon to make snow on a mountain. And she said, the page is already white. What do you need a crayon for? Why add a layer? And so I began having my patients do drawings and thought, again, I was discovering incredible things. And since I know anatomy, I could see the body in it. And again, that got the hospital interested, see? Siegel was crazy, but then, hey, that's more interesting than an x-ray.
Okay.
And some of the Jungian therapists who were helping me said, yes, Jung used to be fascinated by the somatic aspects. And I said, yes, because he knew anatomy. An art therapist may not have any sense of anatomy in their training, so they don't see what I would see looking at a tree or a stream or an airplane or whatever, you know, and see a part of the body there.
Right, they don't know how to interpret it.
And
so that's the magic that you bring to art for your patients. And I know that you're trying to teach doctors to use these drawings too.
Yes, that's why I was very happy with this, The Art of Healing book, and Love, Medicine, and Miracles. The first book has a few drawings too. That, you know, my hope is people will look at it and see. And then it becomes interesting, you know, not crazy stuff that they're not, never been exposed to. And then you ask a patient, you know, when you're making a choice, draw yourself in the operating room. Well, one woman drew the devil giving her poison as the doctor giving her her treatment.
So you knew that now, treatment wasn't going to work.
Yeah, I mean, and she'll have every side effect in the book,
right?
You see. And the thing that people really need to understand is how powerful the mind is. I mean, there are cases, I won't go into details, where doctors were upset because they realized they were not treating people for a month due to the medical errors. I mean, radiation machine is repaired. They don't put the radioactive material in. The nurse didn't put the chemotherapy, you know, in the solution and so forth. But they didn't know they weren't treating people. And they were talking to me because of how badly they felt. But I explained to them that it's not your fault. You're not stupid. You thought everybody was being treated because they acted as if they were. See, that's the part that impresses the hell out of me. And you talk about energy. You think you're getting radiation, and you have side effects, and your tumor shrinks. And you're not getting any. Now, you'd say, how do they manage that? But that's how powerful beliefs are and what it does in your body. Because when you picture things, even a simple study was done with seniors. picture yourself lifting weights. Well, they were stronger, you know, a month later than the seniors who didn't picture themselves lifting weights. And neither group lifted any weights during that period, but just picturing it increased muscle strength.
Well, this is the power of your book, A Book of Miracles, because in the stories, you give people the opportunity to think for themselves about how they can think differently, how they can feel and expect differently, and be more sensitive. In other words, move into their higher mind of allowing serendipity and synchronicity to show up in ways that can heal them that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Yeah, thank you. That is well put.
Thank you.
I often use the word potential so people will realize they have a potential, you know, what they're capable of accomplishing.
Right, and that's what your book is about. It's about showing the potential that people found to move them through diseases to the other side of it.
Right.
And you talk about, the book has so many different aspects of miracles, including using pets and dolphins.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Everything is there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, one of the things, again, during the introduction you mentioned, you know, it's like what's within us. And I found that the biggest issue had to be how your parents treated you. The opposite of love being indifference, rejection, and abuse. And that those who grew up without love, then it's hard for them to pick up this book or accomplish anything.
Sure.
Because they've grown up with guilt, shame, blame. You can't do anything right, so why try? You know, you'll fail again. And when people grew up with love and have self-worth and esteem, they, number one, took care of themselves and also were not afraid to participate in the process. What I call being a responsible participant and not a good patient and submissive sufferer.
But that's why those people who lacked early need to find better late.
Yes.
And work with, you know, read your books and find healers, find people who come from love and can support them, and they can find that in themselves through that.
Yeah, and I think that you, through your programs, myself, through books and things, we can become what I call parents. One young lady called me her CD, or chosen dad, that we can reparent people, that we show them we care about them.
Yes.
And then they ultimately begin to care about themselves because, you know, somebody has shown them they're worth something.
Right.
Versus even the doctor saying, you're not doing anything I tell you, so I'm not giving you a return appointment. I would always give people, I gave them return appointments endlessly.
Uh-huh.
And I found after 3 months, sometimes 6 months, they suddenly begin to take care of themselves. It's like I proved to them that I care.
You gave them worth. You gave them self-worth and self-love because you love them.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's it. You're a work of love.
Thank you. I like that.
Good. So we're about to end the show. Dr. Bernie Siegel, your books are amazing. Your work is amazing. It hasn't been easy because, as you have talked about, the profession you're in is not an easy one. And you're dealing with all kinds of people's struggles that you're helping them through. And
well,
so,
you help the people, yeah. You can't cure every disease,
right?
But you can help people live. And I may say, I find that what people see in me is within them. So that when somebody comes up and says, oh, you're inspiring, you know, it's so wonderful, I say, no, the inspiration's in you. I'm just bringing it forth.
I always say, it takes one to know one.
That's right. Because they're going to, you know, show up for practice, and I can be their coach, and things will happen. But the ones who say, I've heard you before, it's boring, you keep saying the same thing.
Well, they don't get it.
But, no, and the next person says, that was wonderful, thank you.
Right.
You know?
And I think our audience will be very grateful to have heard this interview. Dr. Bernie Siegel, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thanks, Peter.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.